World leaders continue to meet in Paris this week, trying to negotiate an international agreement to deal with climate change. While the issue is a worldwide problem, it's also a classic example of having to think globally and act locally. WBUR's Bruce Gellerman is in Paris, and this morning has this story about the special role Boston plays in dealing with and benefiting from climate change.
Welcome to Paris.
Bonjour, c'est Laurent Mariotte. Ce week-end, pour le Téléthon, pensez à composer le 36-37, vous ferez une bonne action.
It's morning drive time radio, French style. And even if you've never been to Paris, the cab ride from Charles de Gaulle Airport to the center of the city is a familiar scene. It looks a lot like Boston's Southeast Expressway during rush hour. I don't speak much French, and my driver only a little English, but traveling at a snail's or perhaps an escargot pace here, we have no trouble communicating.
Traffic, traffic, traffic.
A just-released UN report finds half of all greenhouse gas emissions come from cities, putting urban areas at the front lines in fighting climate change. At the Ornate Hôtel de Ville, Paris City Hall, the mayor of Paris played host to officials from cities around the world. Featured speaker Jeffrey Sachs, director of Columbia University's The Earth Institute, told the local leaders that national government officials negotiating a global climate treaty don't understand the nuts and bolts of adapting a city's infrastructure to climate change.
After the agreement is reached, who's going to be the first ones to start implementing that? It's going to be the mayors at their desk the next morning, because they have to make contracts with utilities. They have to decide where the next road's going to go, how public transport's going to work, what kind of vehicles are going to be riding on the streets of the cities. So literally where the rubber hits the road is the world cities.
Boston is among those cities leading by way of example how a local government can prepare for a future when climate change requires a transformation of urban infrastructure. Austin Blackman, Boston's chief of environment, energy, and open space, was in Paris to receive a prestigious C40 award, beating out Melbourne and New York City for engaging residents in planning for climate change.
The city of Boston was very, very thankful to win the award. We hope that in future years that other cities will get recognized for copying some of those ideas.
It's a quick 5-hour flight from Boston to Paris, 3,235 miles as the seagull flies. I had met with Austin Blackman a few days before he left for the climate summit in Paris.
So we're here in Christopher Columbus Park, just a handful of feet away from Boston Harbor here.
When it comes to climate change, we're all in the same boat, but different cities face different challenges.
Hopefully, coming out of Paris, we'll have an agreement that'll incentivize all the nations of the world to take drastic action. But if we don't do enough, then there's a chance that areas like this could be subject to flooding on a twice daily basis.
Boston set a goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 25% by 2020 and 80% by mid-century. We're on target with a 17% reduction in just a decade. The city is pioneering an innovative funding mechanism to retrofit Boston's 321 municipal buildings, using the savings from energy efficiencies to pay off loans for the improvements. Now Boston is helping similar-sized cities in China prepare for climate change.
That's really, really important, because as much work as we've done here in Boston, as great as that is, if we can help Chinese cities avoid a ton of CO2 and the number of people that live in China on a per capita basis, if we can influence that change, that affects us globally as well. And so we can really multiply our impact.
The effects of climate change are not abstract or academic. They're real, and they're happening now. You can see them from a balcony on the Wheatley Building at UMass Boston.
And what I love about this view is that it captures the story of climate change in almost all of its pieces.
David Cash was also preparing to go to the Paris Climate Summit when we met. Cash is dean of the McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies.
So here we're looking at the bay overlooking Morrissey Boulevard, which already is flooding at high tides on a pretty regular basis. You can hear that when you hear the morning traffic reports. And we're at ground zero of where the impacts of climate change are going to be.
Cash sets up a small telescope. From here, you can see the past, present, and future of our energy supply. Nearby is National Grid's colorful LNG tank. Natural gas burns cleaner than oil or coal, but it's still a fossil fuel. It's used to generate 45% of the region's electricity. But Cash says it's a transitional bridge to a renewable future. Just behind the tank is a small solar installation. Statewide, solar energy has increased 300-fold in just 8 years. Further out are two commercial wind turbines in Hull. And Cash predicts soon there'll be offshore wind farms and electric cars with smart chips driving roadways.
So that when you plug them in at night, that chip will say, only fill my battery when the price of electricity is below 3 cents. And when they park, you're going to be able to plug in there, and that chip is going to say, sell back to the grid when it's 7 cents a kilowatt hour. So you're going to be making money.
Call it climate change capitalism. Today, there are 5,000 clean energy companies in New England employing 100,000 workers.
That's what's been incredible about this, is that we've been investing in ways that are saving people money. So this whole notion that you can't move to the clean energy future without hurting the economy is a lie here. Moving to the clean energy future is one that's going to bring economic benefits and economic advantages.
It's evening in Paris. Booksellers along the Seine have shuttered their shops. And in the distance, the Eiffel Tower is aglow with 20,000 energy-efficient bulbs, powered in part by four vertical wind turbines hidden in the steel lattice and solar panels on the visitor center. Today, the world's most visited monument uses 30% less electricity than a decade ago. And next year, companies that want to provide the City of Light municipal government with electricity will have to supply 100% of it from green, renewable sources. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Bruce Gellerman in Paris.